This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
It's that time of the week, and back again with Louise Taffer is George Denekian. Hello. Just
Hi.
Waving to everybody on Facebook Live. We've got a very interesting hour between now and 6 o'clock. We'll take a look at all the ins and outs for this week's round of the A-League. Joining us shortly, someone we haven't spoken to before. His name is Ken Steed. He's the conference director of the International Football Coaching Conference. It's a unique affair coming up on the Gold Coast on the 25th and 26th of this month at the RACV Royal Pines Resort, which is a great complex if you haven't been to that part of Queensland. You're missing out. It is fantastic. The IFCCA conference will see the head of women's and football development at Football Federation Australia, namely Emma Highwood, who's been very much in the news this year, and the Socceroos head coach,
Graham Arnold,
will be in attendance and speaking. A little bit later, we'll be catching up with the Age's Michael Lynch.
Oh, no.
Who's jigging and singing and dancing. If he's on the bus, if he's on the train, if he's on the tram, you will definitely know it's Michael Lynch. He'll be joining us to do that very special journo segment. No doubt, Lynchy in super high spirits after what was an upset win by Tottenham Hotspur in the UEFA Champions League semi-final played at the Etihad this morning. But before we go there and before we touch on some of the incredible highs and disappointments that went on, we must look at the news of the day, as always, Louise.
Thank you, George.
Take us through it.
Well, this is the beginning of a generational change in the A-League, with a whole host of players calling it a day. The latest one is Brisbane Roar's captain, Matt Mackay.
Wow.
He will retire this month after an 18-year professional career.
That's not a bad gig. 18 years playing the game that you love. Oh, fantastic. And congratulations to him. He's done pretty well.
Pretty amazing. He joins Alex Brosk, who we've also heard is retiring, Carl Valeri, Mark Bridge, and also Brendan Santelab.
That's not bad, is it, eh?
And speaking of Brendan Santelab, it's actually game day for Sydney FC and Perth Glory tonight.
This is the game being played at Jubilee Oval at Kogra, and it's been a happy hunting ground for Sydney. Can they sort of take apart the premiers? Can they upset them now that they've settled down, they've won the plate, and are just coasting now while they get to, hopefully, to the grand final?
I'm not sure how it'll go tonight, because it depends on what Popovich does. How does he approach this game? We've seen in the ins and outs yesterday for this match that he's brought in a number of fresh faces. So yep. Does he tinker with the squad?
Have you ever seen him tinkering?
No.
No, he's always, and one of your great criticisms to me over the year has been, he doesn't give enough of the youngsters a chance to have a play. He's won the premiership, but he wants to win the grand final series as well. I'm thinking he's going to put the foot down. I'm thinking he's going to bring in one or two faces, but at the end of the day, I'm saying he's going to gather them, and he's going to say, only part of the journey. We haven't completed the full course yet. And I think if you want to prove yourselves to be a championship side, you've got to do it at both ends of the season. Not only, you know, you've shown them a clean pair of heels for much of the year, time to show them that you're also, you know, the best balance team in the competition. And let me tell you, they've been pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, how else can you look at players of the caliber of Killer, who left Melbourne City very angry man last year? I would have thought now he'd be sending Melbourne City an email, or maybe a bouquet of flowers, or maybe his old strip, and saying, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to leave early and not see out my contract. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had this opportunity to win. So, you know, always two ways to look at things. So, Killer, I dare say he's smiling right now, thinking, yeah, it's good to be a premiership-winning player.
And, George, I can see you are wearing a very big smile Is there any reason for that?
Look, it's been a very big day. I was thinking about buying myself a Powerball ticket, but I reckon I've used up all my luck.
And
there is absolutely no extra luck left. What
that's,
was that?
That's the wrong thinking.
No.
If you've had a lucky day, then you've got to ride on all that luck.
When you reflect on what I have seen today from Etihad and from what happened at Yankee Stadium later in the day, I feel very, very blessed, very balanced and very, very happy. Almost as happy as Michael Lynch, or no, Lynchy, not yet, but Mr. Ken Steed, I think, is going to join us. Ken, welcome to FNR.
Hey, guys, how are you?
We're not too bad at all. Louise wants to know, why have you decided to do this conference, for one, on the Gold Coast, and two, what was the driving force behind the thinking to get this up and running?
I think the first point is easy. Because we're having the conference in the end of May, because if you want people from Europe or South America, etc., you've really got to do it at the end of May or June.
And you've got to excite them by wanting to bring them to the Gold Coast.
Well, if we go south, it means we get cold. And I'm a Queenslander, and that's just not going to happen.
Well said, Ken.
That covers your first point.
Yep, true.
The second point's probably more valid. If you think back, we haven't had a national coaching conference since 2010, which was actually up here in Brisbane as well. Now, I sat down with Football Queensland, and as you do, you talk a lot about football and some of the things that are happening and how you think you can improve the game. So one of the things we spoke about was filling the void that was created after the FFA stopped doing the national conference. Now, they did a terrific job. Kelly Cross and Han Berger and that, they were fantastic with what they did. But I think since then, you know, we've basically become a nation where a lot of coaches spend a lot of time on the internet now, whether it's Facebook or whatever, you know, and they're downloading drills, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we need a reset button. I think we need to get football people back together in the one place, sharing their experience and learning from others.
You mean a real hands-on experience, an opportunity to hear from people who are heading the football development for, say, in the women's, with Emma Highwood being there, and of course, very much on the money, because she's going to be part of a huge push by our Matildas to really take on the world come June.
Yes, and I must congratulate Emma on the job that she's been doing in that area. The Matildas, they've been doing really, really well for quite a while now, and the women's game's really, really growing in this country, and there's going to be further opportunities ahead. So I think for us it was a case of, let's bring a lot of women's content into this conference. So it's something we're looking forward to.
And it's not only the women's game who we will hear from. We'll also hear from the Socceroos head coach, Graham Arnold. How exciting is that?
It's very exciting for us. We've tried to be creative in what we've tried to do rather than just do a standard conference. So, you know, we're going to hear from Arnie, and he'll talk about his, a better term, talking about creating an ID for the Coltex Socceroos. But, I mean, we'll also cover other interesting topics like, you know, Indigenous football, Australian professional academies, et cetera, national teams. So there's lots of things where there'll be lots of debate, and it'll be very, very interesting for the footballing public.
We're talking to Ken Steed, who's the conference director of what promises to be a pretty exciting international football coaching conference coming up on the Gold Coast between the 25th and 26th of May. And one of the things that really excites me, you mentioned that you want to entice as many people from around the world to join us. Do you have any idea of who's likely to come and where from?
Well, we've got people coming from Brazil, from Portugal, from Spain, from England, etc. We've got some really interesting characters. We've got Marco Monti, who is the academy director at Inter Milan. We've got Jonathan Cabanellis. He works at Aspire Academy, and his background, He came through the athletic club or Bow system, where they had a terrific academy. So him and Adurto Marua, they work there, they worked in Chile together, and now they're in Aspire. So they'll bring their methodology. We've got Vitor Matos that's from FC Porto. So there's going to be a lot there for coaches, and there's going to be a lot of practicals as well, so they can see a lot of hands-on stuff.
Ken Steed, I need to ask something else. I worked for a great number of years at SBS, and we had the masterful stroke of bringing subtitlers in to translate all those that didn't speak the common tongue in Australia, which was at the time English. You're going to have a lot of international guests. How are you coping with the international languages, the mix of languages?
I'm not too bad myself because I've been around, but if the Australian public can understand me, then I think they'll probably be able to understand the others as well.
And I suppose at the end of the day, they're talking about the international game, so it's not a problem, is that right?
That's correct, right. Yeah. I think the other thing about this conference, George, is it's football specific. It's not a conference where it's multiple sports, etc. That's what happens a lot these days.
Yep.
It's just purely the world game.
Fantastic. Louise and I have been discussing for just about the whole year. One of the things that drives us insane, from the day we launched what has turned out to be FNR, Football Nation Radio, we've talked about, the ascendancy and the excellence of centres of excellence that we've had in the past. And what we'd love to see is a day again in Australia when we have one national body stroking and making the game very special, but having half a dozen or more centres of excellence right across Australia, identifying the best talent and bringing them up to speed and keeping them, as they say, on the boil, ready to slip into whether it's the Matildas or whether it's the Ollie Roos or the Joeys or the Socceroos. Is that something that strikes real joy into your heart too, Ken?
It does, like anybody else. We want strong national teams, both male and female. I think one of the things for us is we've got to grow the game. If we grow the game, we've got greater numbers, we've got depth. One of the issues we have now is when players leave the A-League, etc., and they go with the national teams, then teams suffer. Other countries, because they've got greater depth, it doesn't bother them as much. So, hopefully that we can get together, we can grow the game and increase our numbers.
And Ken, have you had a good response since announcing the event so far?
Louise, it's been fantastic. First of all, when I got involved, Football Queensland were great. Basically, from the management through to the board, they've worked very, very hard. But from day one, the FFA have come on board. What they've done has just been incredible. And then on top of that, we've got Football Coaches Association, the PFA. So I think people have realised that let's all keep talking together. Let's keep building the game. We're all in it for the same thing. One of the problems we've had for a number of years is that people want to change others, but they don't want to change themselves. As football people, that's what we've got to drive. We've got to make that change.
And what better way? I mean, you touched on Marco Monti, who's coming to the event, and also a number of people from Aspire Academy there in Doha. And Qatar, in their own right, are really progressing as a country. They've only just taken out the Asian Cup recently.
And they want to take out the World Cup next.
Well, that's it.
Well, I actually spent 4 years working in Doha previously, before I came to the A-League. They're an example of, they've got a small population, very small population, and they won the Asian Cup. We've got a far bigger population. What are we doing?
Yeah, well, we should add, though, that they don't have rugby league, rugby union, or the AFL to contend with, and they are also focused with another ingredient that makes a huge difference. It's called money. Volumes and volumes of money. And in fact, some people don't realise just how incredible the airport is at Doha. This is the international airport that they've only just finished. They're about to restart, or I think they've just restarted again. They're doing a redevelopment of this brand new stadium, this brand new airport, because it's reached capacity already. So it's an incredible station, incredible country, Ken.
It is. I mean, I still can't believe we're having a World Cup there. I really can't. But, I mean, it's...
It'll be air-conditioned, you know, and you won't have a problem, Ken. Stick with me.
I just can't get over the size of it. It's so small.
It is small, but they're going to make everything available to you on trams, trains and buses, and you'll be able to see basically three or four games a day. You won't be having to traverse from one end of Australia or one end of Russia to the other. That's the thing that a lot of people will be stunned about, is it's how compact it is, as you touched on. But it's going to be quite amazing because the technology they've put and poured into the development of this tournament is going to be there for all to see.
I'm sure it'll be a terrific World Cup. My only concern is that I hope Australia are there and they're very, very strong when you go there.
We'll be there, Ken. We'll be there. And more importantly, FNR will be there on the 25th and 26th. Is that right? We're part of this coverage?
You are.
That's exciting.
For us, we've been really happy with the partners that we've brought on board in terms of credibility, values, etc. You guys do an absolutely fantastic job in promoting football, and for us to have you on board is a massive tick for us. It's huge.
Well, Ken, take it from both of us in the studio and most of the team at FNR. Means the world to us to keep promoting the game and giving people an opportunity to hear about all elements of the game, whether it's the coaching, the inaugural coaching conference to be held at the RACV Club at the Royal Pines Resort on the 25th and 26th of May, or whether it's the matches throughout the A-League season, or as we catch up with our journos when we do our regular segments. It's an opportunity to showcase everything that's happening in the game, and we want to push it not only across Australia, but also give people around the world a chance to listen in and to see how things are developing down under.
Guys, you're very much infectious. But no, seriously, a lot of motivation for people. So just keep doing what you're doing. And yeah,
thank you very much.
I think it's a great relationship.
Ken Steed, the conference director of the first international football coaching conference to be held on the Gold Coast a little bit later this year, 25th and 26th of May. Thank you very much for that, Ken. Louise, it's exciting when you see so many international names coming down under. And all wanting to talk about the one thing, the round ball code.
Yeah, exactly. And when you hear some of these clubs that they're coming from, Inter, Aspire Academy, you've even got Brighton, Matty Ryan's over there, Manchester City. So there's a whole host of people coming to talk and to give their knowledge and time and energy to other coaches
around
ideas.
The world. Fantastic stuff. Speaking of fantastic stuff, Miss Louise, are you aware that quite possibly the biggest Tottenham Hotspur supporter is about to join us on FNR? I'm not talking Murray Shaw, I'm talking Michael Lynch from The Age. How are you, mate?
Yeah, all right, thanks. Yeah.
Have you recovered? Have you? Is your heartbeat back beating at the normal rate?
Yeah, I had all day to recover really now.
What did you make of it?
Oh, well, what an extraordinary game. I mean, you just had to marvel at it. I mean, I thought, you know, when City went 4-2 up, I thought, well, it's probably going to be 5 or 6, you know. But then Llorente got that one back, controversy, obviously. And then that extraordinary last-minute drama, you know. I'm not a fan of VAR. I'm still not a fan of VAR, but it did work to Spurs' advantage on this occasion. But so I'll take it, but I'm still not a huge fan of it.
You know, the thing about VAR is people thought they would bring certainty to the game, and yet we still have a situation where the one thing we're not quite certain of is just what amount of certainty we can expect. I think part of the game has always been you didn't like the referee call, but you wore it. And, of course, that's why FIFA went out of its way to make sure that you didn't see too many replays of what went on, so that you abided by the decision of the referee, and especially in some of the countries where The excitement levels can reach absurd levels. It was something that FIFA was very strong on. But at least now they're trying to educate everyone and saying, look, at those very, very controversial moments, we have got a resource. We haven't quite got it down pat, but we will go to VAR, which is the video assistant referee. And as they get more and more used to it, I suppose it'll be a bit like the cricket. In the early days, I remember how many mistakes we made when we first started with the technology at Channel 9. I was there at the time. And it wasn't quite perfect, but we persisted and got better and better and better.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's basically how it will work. I mean, once the genie's out of the bottle with VAR, it's very difficult, isn't it, to put it back in, particularly when you've got blokes like Gianni Infantino who seem to make it sound as if it's their life's work to introduce it, you know. So I suppose we just have to grin and bear it and get on with it, you know?
Yeah, very good.
I thought it worked quite well in Barcelona-Manchester United in that clash at the Nou Camp because it had to be used in the 10th minute. The referee thought that it should have been a penalty when Fred got a nick on Rakitic. He was so confident that it was a penalty. He was told in his ear, go and check the screen. He went and checked the screen and then realised it wasn't, and it wasn't, and he overturned his decision. So I thought it worked very seamlessly there.
No, I don't care. It just destroys the drama, destroys the narrative flow. It creates a broader, more aggressive, more angry, dysfunctional narrative. I mean, how on earth, you know, just because we have the technology to pixelate, pictures on a screen doesn't mean we have to use it. I like the serendipity and the anarchy occasionally of wrong decisions, the kind of aggrieved feeling fans can have that we was robbed.
Michael Lynch.
On the score of things over a season, over two seasons, it does tend to balance out.
Michael Lynch, I'm in the studio with Louise Taffer, and Louise is a huge Manchester United fan. I don't know if she's old enough to remember a moment a number of years ago now, when Manchester United were awarded a goal, when the ball crossed their goal line and their goalkeeper scooped it out. And, of course, the referee said, play on. And it was goal.
You're talking about the famous Pedro Mendes.
Pedro Mendes, masterful Mendes. Super goal that should have been registered on the scoreboard.
Well, it should have been, and it was that cheating goalkeeper from Northern Ireland.
That's
what was
right.
His name? Rory Carroll.
No, but that's something completely different. That's goal line technology. Goal line technology. That's different.
The camera
from
was there, and they could have used it. They chose not to.
We don't differentiate. But look, I think the only possible legitimate use of VAR would be for goal line technology.
All right. Okay, well, we've heard it. The pain lingers for a great many Manchester City fans, but there are many, many Spurs fans, and Murray Shaw has got a smile beaming from ear to ear. Look, it sets up an extraordinary series of semi-finals now. It's Barca against Liverpool, and it's Spurs against Ajax. And by the way, it's not a cleansing powder. It's Ajax, the football team, right? Not Ajax, all right?
Just
let's settle that now really quickly. Adam Peacock is getting too many people excited.
Do they still sell that Ajax?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, and it's good cleaning product too, by the way. Michael, who are you talking about this week in The Age?
Well, I've actually had a couple of days off, so Wednesday and Thursday, so nothing in tomorrow, but I'll be back on deck Saturday. I'll be looking at the Victory Adelaide game and then throwing forward on Saturday, Sunday for the City game against Wellington, and so whatever the wash-up comes out of the Victory match. So focusing on the A-League at this point.
What do you make of the latest word from Wellington that their coach is leaving? Or has left, or will be about to leave?
Well, it's the worst kept secret in the league, wasn't it?
Most probably.
I mean, if he doesn't turn up at Western United, I'll
you go he.
I won't make any rash promises, but shall we say, I should be extremely surprised. I'd say it's $1.01.
$1.01. So there you go. Michael Lynch has broken the news. He's of the opinion that the coach of Wellington Phoenix will be going to Western United in the new A-League season 2019-2020.
Well, I don't know about breaking it. I think that's another terribly kept secret, isn't it? Doesn't everyone assume that's where he's going to go?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that's true. Will he take the goalkeeper with him?
He'd probably take as many as he can bring, I'd say. I mean, they've signed about, 10 players. There's no real, with all respect to Panayiotis Kone, I mean, he's not exactly a rattling, get the turnstiles turning sort of name. I mean, they haven't actually got any dramatic names, have they?
I don't know about that. I think they'll do very well, thank you very much.
I didn't say they wouldn't do well. Ah. I just said they haven't got any kind of...
Well, they haven't got a Honda, but they have got a Kone.
But it depends what they're after. I think when they first started out, they were more looking to get some local talent from the region, which they've done so.
Yeah, they have.
Well, they've certainly managed to harvest Melbourne City. Have Melbourne City become their feeder team, have they?
Young Carvalho is gone now,
Melbourne City's youth team, has become their feeder team.
Well, Louise has been telling me about the youth team for the better part of the last 2 years, saying that you should go down and see some of the talent. And I remember going down and seeing young John Roberts, and no sooner had I seen him, he left the club and went to Western Sydney.
Yeah, well, he was from Western Sydney.
Yeah.
And he went back home. I watched them 2 weeks ago. I called a game on that FFE streaming website with my son Joe.
Impressed?
When they beat Manningham 3-0, I think. Look, Manningham were definitely worth a goal. The 3-0 really flattered them. But, look, players like Rami Nadjerine certainly stand out when they're playing at that level, and that's why he's been involved, I guess, quite a lot at first team level. But the others didn't necessarily stand out in that game. As I said, I think the 3-0 scoreline rather flattered them.
Michael Lynch we're talking to on FNR, Louise Taffer, George Tanikian. Louise mentioned earlier, Mike, just before you came on, that it looks like a generational change is about to sweep over the A-League with a number of people calling it quits. Matt Mackay, the latest, after 18 years in the top leagues.
Yeah, Matty Mackay, he's had I wouldn't say he's been in the top leagues. He's been in Australia's top league.
Well, he played in the NSL and he's played in the A-League. That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I thought you meant the top
league.
No.
Globally. No, he hasn't done a John Aloisi and played in Spain and Italy and England.
He went to Glasgow and was there only half a season, wasn't he? And then he went to Korea or China, I think it was, and was there half a season. But he's been an absolute sort of bedrock of the Brisbane A-League experience pretty much throughout the entirety of the league, hasn't he?
And, absolutely. And Broski's
kind of squad player who's done a job. I think he's played more than 50 times for Australia. So he's done a remarkably good job with the Socceroos as well, filled in any number of positions, used at left back when they were short, used in midfield. Credit to himself, got the most out of himself and had a wonderful career.
As did Alex Brosk and young Santalab, who Louise tells me is one of the first people she interviewed when she got into the caper.
Oh, Santa.
Santa.
Look, super sub Santa. Fantastic. Another bloke who, really was able to make the most of himself and, popped up with goals. I mean, guys like that who just have an unerring instinct as to where to be in the penalty area, in the box, and can score. They are priceless. And you know, that's why so many of them do get contracts well into their 30s, even if they know they're going to be bit part players off the bench, because very few players do have that instinct where to be, and that's what kept Santa in the game for a long time. He got that lifeline from Popper when Popovich went to Perth, and that's where he's going to finish. So fair play to him as well.
And Lynchy, speaking of Popovic, Sydney FC are hosting Perth Glory tonight. How do you think this game will go, given Sydney FC have had the wood over Perth Glory in past rounds?
Perth have won the premiership. So, yeah, I'd say Sydney would be hot favourites for this because Perth are travelling, maybe a bit of a hangover after the premiership success last week. And I'd back Sydney here.
All right. Well, we're going to hold you to that. We're going to watch what happens later tonight at Jubilee Oval when Perth Glory take on the local side, Sydney FC. Thank you very much, Michael, for joining us. We look forward to your article on Saturday at The Age.
Yeah, well, there'll be more than one, I'd say.
Are you going to mention anything about our Matildas captain, Sam Kerr, being nominated as the Women's Footballer of the Year by the BBC World Service?
Well, I mean, it's a media outlet. I mean, what's the difference between the BBC World Service nominating someone and The Age or the Sydney Morning Herald
FNR? Unless you can break it to me and tell me that The Age are doing it.
Media outlets, what makes one media outlet necessarily any more informed than another? If it was a FIFA award, if it was a UEFA award, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, it's like, when journalists ring up other journalists looking for quotes. Nah, not for me.
You're now reminding me of my early days in television when I was working at SBS, and anything that happened on any of the other channels didn't matter. Thank you very much for joining us, Michael.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but the BBC World Service does a good service. But if it was the Daily Telegraph World Women's Awards, would we report that? Probably not.
Thank you, Michael.
I don't get super excited and don't feel the need to just constantly be reaffirming all the time. People, we all know Sam Kerr's a top player. To me, she'll justify all the accolades. If Australia make the last four in the World Cup, she leads them there and scores goals and has a really good tournament.
Yep, that's 100% right.
It's up to her to perform now on the biggest stage. That's where the superstars prove their worth, isn't it? It's why there's always been a slight knock on Lionel Messi, because he never does it for Argentina on the biggest stage of the World Cup, certainly in the way that Ronaldo did for Portugal in the Euros Maradona did for Argentina. But that's another discussion.
Absolutely, for another day. Thank you, Michael Lynch.
Cheers. Bye.
There you go, Michael Lynch. I thought he was a bit stroppy today. Normally I would have thought, full of beans, excitable, very few knocks, but no, he's combative today. Clearly he's had an opportunity to discuss VAR with too many people.
And I thought it worked quite seamlessly in one of the other games. I couldn't believe how quick they rectified the decision, went to look at the screen, and it was all done and dusted.
The best tweet of the day for me was from Louise Taffer to yours truly. It made my morning. You went, wow.
But it's history. Tottenham Hotspur through to the final four.
Yeah, look.
Well done.
In the current era, most wonderful thing. It's the best thing that's happened to Spurs since Bill Nicholson's great side of the 60s took them into the European semis. It wasn't the European Championship as it is today. It was the European Cup, the Fairs Cup. And Spurs were just about the biggest team in Britain at the time, 61-62. It's great to see this side. A great many people, even Spurs fans, had not written off but didn't really think we could go to Etihad and come away with the points. We lost, but we did come away with the points. So well done to all concerned. And if you're a Spurs person, male or female, you'd be over the moon.
Oh, just incredible. What a game it was.
Look, when I saw the scores inside the first 11 minutes, it was like 2-2. I'm thinking, what? Are we playing touch?
Spurs fans were in dreamland.
Oh, they were. I mean, look, I thought the commentary was exhilarating because they had prepared themselves for something completely different. And this is the wonderful thing about international sport. It can provide you with an amazing and exhilarating ride if only you're prepared for it. And no one was prepared for it.
We're going to take a listen, George, to the highlights, and then we'll come back and discuss a little bit more of our...
Okay. For those of you that didn't get up early this morning, get a load of this.
...with Mendy. He's got away from him here, though. Company! It's come off, Llorente. It's gone in! The advantage swings back to Spurs! Oh, has there ever been a VAR goal check like this? Not in the Champions League, not yet. Spurs do have the lead. Aguero to Sterling. Sterling! Raheem Sterling wins the game all over again. My goodness, as if there couldn't be any more drama. Oh, that's remarkable. The goal's chalked out and Spurs can celebrate all over again. VAR has come.
To all the naysayers and knockers who have absolutely torn strips over the fans of Manchester City at Etihad, who everyone tells you they sit there on their hands, they don't get too excited because they're so accustomed to winning. They had gone troppo. They were screaming. Mm. They thought twice that they had the game right where they wanted it and they were on their way to the semi-finals, only to hear the whistle of the referee and the VAR, you know, on the screen, and oh my goodness. Look, when you hear commentary, and commentary becomes extra special when in the middle of it you actually hear the essence of everything. The doubt, the shock, the awe, the excitement, and all of that, you know, filters through the voice of the commentator. You know, that's when they've done a fabulous job. Not when they've, you know, spent half an hour talking. It's when they've absolutely encapsulated everything in a moment. Yeah? Two or three, four words, super descriptive, and the roar of Etihad. I mean, you almost drowned out the commentary, which tells you just how excited people were. It was something to behold.
Oh, it was. It certainly was. What did you make of Llorente's goal? Because a number of people saying that it
wasn't.
Came off
look,
his hand.
The simplest way I can explain it, and I've always been a great believer that fans wear their own team's glasses, their own filter. Yeah. Now, the best thing I can explain to you, and I say this for Athos Syrianos and Nick Debano, who are still in shock, my advice to them is go and have a look at Thierry Henry. When he magically handled a ball into the goal and cost Northern Ireland, and a young guy called Diego Maradona who took on the world and with the hand of God changed a World Cup. You know, there was nothing like that. Yes, it did it touch his hand? Quite possibly. More than probably.
I thought it came off his hip.
But as they say, what do you expect my hands to do? They're by my side. It wasn't as if he moved them. And if he had, it was infinitesimal, you know, couldn't clarify it one way or the other. And at the end of the day, if the VAR cannot distinguish that the call is wrong, it goes with the original call. I think that's correct. Is that right? Mm. And if that's the case, then the original call was goal Tottenham.
It's so, the history of the Tottenham.
Do that again. Love that again. Play it again. Oh, you've missed it. Oh.
You know Christian Eriksen, he said he must be one of the luckiest guys in the world right now.
Yeah, because he gave the ball away at a critical moment when that man... How good is Raheem Sterling?
Oh, he is just incredible. He continues his form week in, week out.
It's not only his form. He is building... Now, I think he's now... When he was playing at Liverpool, I thought he was a fantastic young player who had a couple of real holes in his game. First touch wasn't something you could depend on, right? Where he is today, I put it to you that he's possibly one of England's World Cup stars now. I think he's world class. And this has only been the last couple of years. So his development under Guardiola has been immense. And if he's going to help England to a World Cup, well, Pep's got to get a gold medal as well or a World Cup medal because that's just fantastic stuff. I haven't seen a young player with an electric button other than Salah and people of that and Kylian Mbappe this young man is sensational to watch. And when you have De Bruyne on the other side, who has this unerring ability to find him almost at will, they are a fabulously potent side. And to all the Spurs fans, you know what? We're playing Manchester City again.
At the weekend.
And again, it's at Etihad. So let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We still want to make the top four. And I think Manchester City are going to come out. If you thought they were coming out angry and fired up before, it's going to be on for young and old. So that might well be the hottest ticket in town. Suddenly, that you didn't think it was going to be a pretty hot ticket. I think it will be now. For different reasons.
I would love to see it. I'd love to go. Do you have tickets?
No. Well,
can you get us tickets?
Perhaps.
Anyway, someone else who's also grinning is Jurgen Klopp.
Oh, absolutely. All the Liverpool fans, buoyant.
My dad is a Liverpool fan.
Pull back for Salah, miss hit. Wijnaldum. Here's Salah. Chance for Mane. Well, he's not celebrating. The flag has gone up. Oh, he's going to change it and give a goal. Liverpool have scored. Away against the run of play, it has to be said. Alexander-Arnold fed it to Mo Salah. It was just a formality. And over for Liverpool, their aggregate lead has doubled tonight. They're over the hills and far away.
Yeah, that's pretty much as it was at the end. But halfway through that first half, that opening half of the game, Liverpool were under enormous pressure. I thought Porto had 3-4 good chances to score. Had they gone in, might have been a little bit tighter for the Liverpool fans, but it wasn't to be. They got the goal against the run of play, that first one, and that basically then broke the defence down and opened the game up. And as you saw, 6-1 on aggregate, which is pretty emphatic.
And we talk about players with individual brilliance, with that X factor. Sadio Mane is another one of them.
Yep.
He actually became Liverpool's first player in the UEFA Champions League era to score 10 Champions League knockout stage goals.
I'm thinking for all those pundits who said he would make a great bench player, again, another set of brownie points for them.
Now,
what were they thinking? They clearly hadn't seen too much of Mo Salah.
Or they spoke too soon.
Way too soon. You know, if you go from being a bench player or purported to be a bench player and suddenly you're the best and in ages, it's a very, very big departure. So well done to Liverpool fans around the world, and they number in the millions. They'll probably get a few more fans because they'd love to jump on. They're front runners, Liverpool fans. Absolutely lovely.
I don't know if they'll get a few more.
Oh, yeah,
depends what happens in their next clash against Barcelona.
What a contest. Speaking of players and great players, the Preston Lions club show, which is called the Lions Den, features a socceroo who could score a goal or two, a guy called Warren Spink. So if you want to hear somebody who absolutely loved the game and played the game with really great dash, it'll be Spinky. He'll be joining the boys to talk all things Preston Lions, including they'll talk about the FFA Cup tie, which is coming up on Saturday. They take on Dandenong City. The game starts at 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon at BT Connor Reserve. I know it as BT Connor, but Louise, you know it as?
Tell me.
Genus Steel, don't you? They've got a new sponsor down there, Genus Steel Stadium. So there you go. If you want to know any more about that contest, join us for the club show, which will feature Josh Parrish, who will be delighted in having an opportunity to talk to a Socceroo star, Warren Spink. By the way, speaking of other stars, the Pioneers tonight, second to last program of the year, G1 and G2, we're looking forward to catching up with a guy who came out and played for, came out and played for Marconi a long time ago, and then went on to have a very successful career and still is coaching. He coached the Matildas to the Asian Cup. He coached the Americans, the number one team in the world, and he's now coach of New Zealand. I'm talking about Tom Samani. So if you want to join us for the Pioneers, that'll be from 7 through to 8 o'clock tonight on FNR. So make sure you join us for that.
looking forward to that and hearing from Tom Smarney.
Absolutely, especially here's a guy who coached in the men's people or players of the calibre of Ned Zelich. I want to pick his brains and say, what was Ned like to coach? And he also coached, had the great joy of coaching one of the most fabulous female players in the world.
Marta.
So, again, an opportunity to hear from Tom Samani about some fabulous people he's coached, but more importantly, take him back, let him reminisce about his great days. Although he was born in Scotland, he did come to Australia in the early 80s and started out at Marconi. And played for Canberra too, Canberra City. So there you go, some great stories to be had with Tom Samani on the Pioneers tonight, G1 and G2 from 7 o'clock through to 8 o'clock.
And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio, or if you are with us on Facebook Live, hello to you, you can comment below. And we have had a comment come through, George. His name's Mitchell.
So, what did Mitchell have to say?
Hi to you. He said, do you guys have any insight on what Victory are planning for next season in terms of strikers, as most of the current squad won't be there?
Ah. Well, look, I would say to you, we have a number of stalwarts, a number of Victory sympathisers in the FNR team. They go very quiet come game time, and then after the game, then you hear all the noise, you know, come out of there. One of them is a very big member of the For Vuck Sakes program. I'm talking about Josh Parrish. So when he's not doing the Lions Den, he's probably doing For Vuck's Sake. I'll ask him, and maybe he might drop a pearl or two and give us an insight into who they might be recruiting, or indeed who they might be bringing through from the youth team. I think Elvis has done a pretty good job in his first season in the A-League. He's been a really exciting contribution and a contributor. The challenge, I think, for Victory all year has been its inability to get all of its stars on the paddock at the same time for great lengths of time. If they can do that through the final series, they'll be very, very hard to beat. Very, very hard to beat.
Oh, for sure. And especially if they have Toivonen up front. We know how crucial he is.
Fantastic.
To the team. He's like the missing puzzle. Whenever he is in the team, he seems to score, which ultimately wins them the game.
Well, it's very hard when you have a world-class player who's fit and he's 7 foot tall. I mean, it's very hard to hide him, and it's very hard to not affect the game when you're that talented and that capable. And he does read the game like very few players, and that's because he is a world-class player. So commendations to all involved who got him across, who have allowed those of us in the A-League to see players of that calibre. Quite often you've heard that we don't have that many stars in the A-League. Guys, we've had some fantastic talent on show this year, and they've really shone at times. It's a pity they haven't been able to do it week in, week out, because Honda, when the season started, looked and played like a superstar, and then I think they lost him for about 7 or 8 weeks. So that held the club back. But Victory have continued to find a way to win when they've needed to, and they're there or thereabouts. So, again, to Kevin Muscat, who, remember, this time last year, no one believed he'd be given an opportunity to coach again at Victory. Well, he got the extension, and he's still doing wonderful things, and he won a title from fifth.
Speaking of...
There you go.
A-League stars, a former A-League star, and one of our favourites.
Who's that?
Socceroos winger, who's 20 years old, Daniel Arzani.
Oh, he's back. I hear he's getting ready to train again.
He's actually returned to Manchester City to continue his rehab and training, yes, but he is back on the pitch, running around, but not actually on the pitch in terms of playing.
Well, if you've ever seen the setup at Bundoora, which is almost identical to the Manchester City development plan and rehab plan, they bring them in and they go from rehab and training and all that sort of stuff, and ever closer as they improve and get stronger each and every week, they get ever closer to the pitch. So I dare say he's not that far away, and that'll be fantastic to see. We're all hoping that he can progress and show even more growth than he showed last year. It was really a bitter experience and a bitter pill to swallow when we saw him injured in the first, almost his first game for Celtic. And Brendan Rodgers must have been apoplectic, thinking, did that young man just go down injured?
Opening 7 minutes.
Oh, gee. Anyway, Brendan Rodgers has gone. He's no longer there. He's at Leicester. Did you imagine you were going to see the coach of Celtic go from there to one of the clubs in the EPL?
No, but I do imagine he might want to bring across Tom Rogic.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Rogic to Leicester.
Yeah, I think it would be a perfect move for him because he would be under a coach who he's been under for many, many years now.
Tell us what you think. 9994 9999 If you think Tom Rogic would be a good addition to the squad at Leicester City. He certainly, he has a blistering shot and he could get into those spaces. And if they don't do any homework on him, he might surprise the heck out of them.
And unfortunately, Brighton, Matty Ryan's Brighton, are in the dogfight.
They are in a dogfight for survival. Are they looking closer and closer to relegation or not?
Yes, they are.
Ouch.
Unfortunately.
What's their run in? Can you tell me the last two or three games they have? Because that'll be key. What people don't readily realise is at this bottom end of the competition, each and every game is, you know, takes on even greater significance because your tension levels go through the floor. The will of the collective, that is all the players, affects how you turn up and play. And it needs strong coaches. You really need strong managers to be able to, you know, keep these sides fighting. We've seen with Sean Dyche doing a fantastic job for Burnley, who early on in the season couldn't buy a win. Now they seem to be the biggest stumbling block for just about any side playing in the top six or seven of the EPL.
I can tell you, Brighton are actually away to your men, Tottenham Hotspur.
When?
Not this round, next round.
So they're playing, of course they're playing at Tottenham Hotspur way, okay.
And then it doesn't get any easier.
They're playing Liverpool?
No. Arsenal and Man City in the last two rounds.
And Arsenal wants to get into the top four, so they're not going to be lying down. They're not going to be, forgetting to play, at 100%.
But Brighton are just 2 points above the drop zone, so it's not looking good. We already know that Aaron Moyes, Huddersfield are going to be relegated,
yep,
so we don't want to see Matty Ryan in the same boat.
Oh, well, it's in their hands. They've got to get up there and do something important. And exhilarating to think, though, that next year we might see the return of Leeds to the EPL. I haven't seen Leeds in the EPL since the days of Mark Viduka and Harry Kewell.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, long time ago. Long time ago.
And do you know what? Just switching countries for the time being. Let's go to
France. As you can and often do to me. Go on.
Let's go to France for the minute.
Yeah.
PSG have actually missed out on securing the title.
They've had a season from hell.
For the third time. They lost 3-2 to Nantes this morning.
Okay, here's a question for you. They've got more quality than 10 other teams. There's something else that's at the heart of this problem, and I think it's to do with attitude.
It is, 100%. It is.
Okay.
I'm not.
So a new coach, you're expecting a new coach there then?
I'm not really, to be honest, a big fan of PSG. I'm really not. Okay. Like, I love Buffon, but the rest I'm just.
And you don't have any time for Kylian Mbappe?
I do, but the team collective, no.
Okay.
Buffon, right. As I said, I love him. He's great.
Yeah.
I think everyone should learn off him and, you know, emulate his values and his character and the way he respects the game. He respects
just remind
players.
Me again, is Neymar still there?
Yes.
Right. That may well be the biggest problem. brilliant player, but gee, he can be such a disruptor. I would think in the dressing room and certainly on the football field when it comes to let's play together, folks. Let's play together. Look, when you see sides, you know, all singing from the same hymn sheet and playing from the same brand of football, it's amazing how well they tend to do. And one of the things I've been pleasantly thrown up and I've enjoyed watching, it's how Tottenham has managed to play when Harry Kewell is not there.
Harry Kane.
Sorry, did I say Harry Kewell?
Yes,
Harry,
you did.
Harry Kane. Yeah, Kane and Co., Harry, everyone was saying, no, Harry, no Spurs. But since we saw the return of Son, and hasn't he become the most exhilarating Asian footballer of the last 10 years?
Yes.
Just fantastic.
And he steps up when Kane isn't there. And it's a similar thing with Juve. When they have Ronaldo in the side, it's a different team. And then when Ronaldo isn't in the side, you see players like Dybala step up, Moyes Keane step up. The 19-year-old has been in starring form across the past, you know, 7 or 8 games which he started. So the dynamic changes when you bring the big game player back into the team. And that's what you're seeing with Tottenham Hotspur.
I'm going to ask you a question regarding Juventus. Allegri, stay or go?
Look, the boys in the office think he'll stay.
Okay.
But I think it could be time up.
Look, when you run out of ideas, you have to start talking about how we didn't have enough players. You've got to ask more serious questions about that. Juventus have recruited, you know, like they were going to win 2 competitions, the European one and the Italian one, the Serie A. And the Serie A one, you know, it's a fait accompli. They can't miss it. But their European hopes have been dashed well and truly yet again, because they came up against a young side that was just had no quit in it. They just kept coming and they just kept coming and they played some wonderful football.
And that is a team singing from the same hymn sheet.
Yep, there's no doubt about that.
I love the way Ajax play. If you go back, George, whatever you're doing tonight, go back and watch that game and just watch Ajax. Watch the way they play, because it is just beautiful. And that is what, to me, football is. When their passing is just seamless and it just has that ebb and flow. Oh, beautiful to watch. I would love to see Barcelona take on Ajax.
The last time I saw Dutch football played with that sort of eccentricity and seamlessness, it involved and wrapped itself around a guy called Jan Cruyff. And to think that there are some Dutch people coming out for the inaugural International Football Coaching Conference in Australia on the 25th and 26th of May. FNR will be there. We'll be relaying the event, an opportunity to hear from some of the biggest coaching names in the world. And importantly, Socceroos head coach Graham Arnold will be there. He'll be part of the keynote address that will be made by a number of speakers. I also have heard that we're going to have Emma Highwood from the, I suppose, the FFA. She's going to be there talking about the women's game. So an opportunity. If you haven't heard about it, let us remind you yet again, a terrific event taking place at the RACV Club on the Gold Coast, at the Royal Pines Resort, 25th and 26th of May. If you love the game, if you're a part of the coaching fraternity and want to hear what some of the brightest and smartest thinkers in the game are talking about, get yourself up to the Gold Coast. And if you can't get there, make sure you're listening to FNR, Football Nation Radio.
One of the best, George.
Yep. Tom Samani is our Pioneers guest. And as I mentioned earlier, Warren Spink will be part of the team that makes up the Lions' Den tonight from 8 o'clock.
That's great. But yeah. I've got a quick question for you.
Go.
Peter's come through and said, George, have you played football before? If so, what team and what position?
I was always a goalkeeper. In my very, very early days at school, I was thrown in as a left winger and a striker and a left back. Notice left, left, left. And then through an injury in a knockout competition, my coach at the time, Josef Venglos.
I thought you were going to say Cruyff.
No. Josef Venglos, who was the man who ultimately returned from Australia and went to Czechoslovakia and led them to the European Championship in 76. He was the man that made me a goalkeeper and gave me a start. And I suppose I would have played a little bit longer than I did if I hadn't damaged a shoulder at a critical time, and they couldn't repair it in those days. So goalkeeper was my favourite position. And if you're wondering, I was most critical of Hugo Lloris this morning when he allowed the ball to cross in front of him and end up in Sterling's foot. I thought he had to dive and intercept that ball rather than let it just watch it cross his body. Goalkeepers have got to be more daring. They've got to be braver than ever before. They don't get attacked like we used to. When I was playing the game, you were allowed to bundle the goalkeeper into the goals if they were off balance, and it happened quite a lot. But you defend yourself accordingly, and you also take up your position a bit differently than they do today. I think they go to ground far too easily. They get too many free kicks. I'd like to see the game toughen up a bit more. But that's just me.
Well, George,
did I answer the question?
Yes, you
did.
Yeah,
goalkeeper.
Thank you for your company because we're out of time right now.
Oh, we're out of time. Time for us to head out. I'll be back at 7 o'clock for the Pioneers with George Katsanis.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.